Hello there. Well, this is Alex Simmons. I'm solo today. It's Sunday. I believe it's the 8th of July. Well, it shows you how accurate I can be or not. And I'm actually speaking to you without Chris because I'm on one side of the Atlantic and he's on the other. And unlike the Serbia episode we did, our timing hasn't connected. So we'll somehow hook up later and we'll talk. And, make it a little bit more typical, tell the damn story. But, as I said, I'm reporting to you from Hamburg, Germany, right? And it's a lovely afternoon, sunny afternoon, I'd say maybe in the early 70s. Sun's shining, birds are singing, the wind is blowing nicely, and I'm here just for the day. And I thought I would take this opportunity to, as a tell the damn story episode, to just briefly talk about how environment or locations can affect or inspire a writer or a creator. I mean, I'm sure a lot of you who travel know that you go to a place and you see something that sparks your imagination or tickles your fancy or brings back memories from, you know, your past or makes you excited about the potential future, you know, all of those things. As a writer, and even as a photographer or an illustrator, but, you know, speaking specifically as a writer, you look at the world around you, and you see things. You absolutely see the people, the buildings, you know, whatever Mother Nature has placed before you. You see all those things, but you're also observing with almost like a third eye. I'm not going to go metaphysical, but seeing certain things triggers not only, oh, isn't that pretty, or isn't that interesting, isn't that fascinating, isn't that horrid, isn't that, you know, bizarre, whatever. It also tracks, almost like, you know, a sidetrack, right into the basket of idea possibilities and inspirations and what-ifs, which is what I like to always refer to them as what-if. So I've never been to Germany before. I've flown over it, but I've never been here, so landing, I'm in, what is it, the Amber Cafe near, I'm on the corner of Stubenhook, I'm sure I'm not pronouncing that properly, Stubenhuk, I cannot see the cross street sign, but it's a cute sort of pastry and yogurt and fruit juice and wood and curtains, and the doors are open, and there's glass windows all around, and it's really sunny, and the people here are really just, you know, they're nice, they're open, they're warm, they're most of them are younger than I am, for sure, probably in their 20s, you know, somewhere, but there's a good sort of inviting feel about it, and it struck me as this is the place I wanted to sit to do this episode. So, I mean, that's the first thing. The environment said, come, sit here. This is a good, nurturing, creative, or stimulating environment without being, you know, say, energized and rowdy, you know, which is also fun. So that's one of the things. But I've been walking around the city for the past 3 hours. Actually, it was four, but I was with a friend for the first hour or so. And we got into a cab, and the cab driver took us around and pointed out things, and that was all great, and that was exciting, and that was inspiring in its way. And then, you know, my friend and I had lunch, and then she wanted to go back to the ship. By the way, we came in on the Queen Victoria. Yes, I'm not name-dropping here. I'm just saying this is what happened. Came in on the Queen Victoria, and I'm only about 5 minutes walk from there now. But once she went back to the ship, you know, I went and I sat in a Starbucks. Yeah, they're all over the world. Sat in a Starbucks and sort of process what I had seen before. The people, the clothing, the accents, the energy, you know, who was flirting with who seemed sour, parents pushing children in baby carriages, all those things. There are a number of canals here in Hamburg. There's water and viaducts and all these things. And so there's sunlight glittering off water. There are tour boats and all of these things, you know, just sort of whirling around me. And I begin to wonder things like, okay, this is wonderful the way it is right now, or this is interesting the way it is now. What was it like 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago? And because I do, you know, an action-adventure series that takes place in the 1930s, what was Hamburg like back then? You know, your 30s, you're talking about the time that leads up to, you know, the war, World War II. So, you know, what was different, you know? And I, you know, it's not lost on me that I'm also, you know, an African-American in this town. And I've seen other blacks, whether they're African, West Indian, East Indian, I don't know what. But, you know, I've seen a few. But predominantly, I'm this African-American walking around, and I'm noting reactions to me. And so that, of course, and it's not hostile. You know, I'm not painting a negative picture here. I'm just saying, you know, some people see me and go, oh, you know. But what I'm also wondering is, you know, again, what would it have been like in the 1930s? What if my character, Aaron Day, who's black, what would it have been like for him here at that time? And, of course, that sparks my thoughts about Jesse Owens and, you know, the Olympics, 1936. So as a writer and as a creative, you see things that don't just please you for the moment, but they offer up avenues and canals to other emotions, other ideas, some of which you'll use immediately or respond to immediately, and some of which you'll jot down. Hopefully you'll do that. You'll record it. You'll write it down. You'll draw a picture, whatever, and use it. You know, stockpile it and use it later in one of your stories or poem or as an inspiration for lyrics to a song or, you know, as an illustration or a painting. But, you know, we capture the moments that most titillate us, and we store them. And we hope that from that, wonderful stories, wonderful, you know, illustrations, wonderful creative pieces will spring forth. I mean, that's how I function for sure, and that's how a number of people that I know and respect also function. So as a writer, as a creative, part of your job, you know, which is a great one, it's a passionate one, I hope, but part of your job is to not only see, but also observe. When Chris was, you know, Chris and I were saying goodbye on the phone a few days ago before I left for here, one of the things he said to me was, you know, we were talking about observations, and he said, not only are you going to see things, but you're going to hear things, you're going to smell things, you're going to taste things. So again, all of your senses heighten when it comes to gathering material for your creative works. So when you go someplace, you know, what does that place smell like? Or what is there a scent that comes to mind at some point, crosses you, that you respond to in a certain way? And can you use that later? You know, not just perfume, but food, smell of wet grass or clothing, sometimes a foul odor that you know, strikes a nerve in you, and you can use that later too as one of your characters reacts in a similar fashion. These are all the things that we look at, and as I said, use as inspiration. And then just to go totally, you know, people over politics, or go people oriented totally, when I travel, you know, one of the things I look for is how people are living. You know, what do I see? Who do I see? And no matter where I go, you know, from Africa to Germany, from the Netherlands to Moscow, you know, or to the West Indies, I see parents reacting and interacting with their kids very much the same way, you know, good or bad. I see couples interacting pretty much the same way, good or bad. And yes, their culture, their upbringing is a factor, but there are a lot more common denominators than singular, only one place in the world does this experiences. So, that's my report today from Hamburg. I've taken a lot of pictures. I know there's going to be a lot of things going through my mind towards the end of this day as I, again, sort of sit and process and try and remember. And certainly, when Chris and I talk, I know he's going to ask me questions, and hopefully even more memories will come forth, more observations will come forth. But for now, this is my episode, my solo episode of Tell the Damn Story. And this in particular is a value of observation, you know, not just seeing, but observing, and then taking note of those observations and stockpiling them to use later in one of your creative efforts. Okay, hope that was of some interest, you know, or use or information that will stimulate and spiral you into a brilliant, inspired, crazy, fantastic, passionate moment of creation. You guys take care. Talk to you soon on Tell the Damn Story.
Hi, this is Chris Ryan from Tell the Damn Story, and I'm in Pittsburgh at the Pope Fest. Alex is off doing Alex things around the world, and I'm here in Pittsburgh. And we're at the Pope Fest, and it's a lot of fun. If you're in the Pittsburgh area, make sure you check out Pope Fest. But what I'm trying to do is to talk to some of the creatives here. And I'm here with Joab Stiglitz, who is an author of the Utgarda series. You want to correct me on that?
That's good enough.
Good enough. And so, hello, Joab. How are you?
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing really good. I'm really glad to meet you. There's so many fun people here this weekend. Talk to me about the Utgarda series. What's it about?
Well, the Utgarda series is about my heroine, Anna Rykov, who is a Russian anthropologist in New York City in the 1920s.
Okay.
And as a female professional who could be a Bolshevik, she has trouble finding a job.
Understood.
So when she gets offered a post by a trustee of a small college to fill in her vacancy, she accepts it.
Of course.
And there she meets a couple other adjuncts, a professor and a doctor, mm-hmm. a priest and a doctor, and the three of them become friends. A year later, the trustee who hired them all on his deathbed, he didn't hire them on his deathbed,
yes,
he was on
but
his deathbed.
He is now on his deathbed.
He's now there, yeah.
Right.
A year later, he asked the three of them to address an indiscretion from his youth, which caused one man to literally lose his head.
Wow.
And another one to go insane. And the first book, The Old Man's Request, is about how they deal with that.
Wow. And if I remember correctly, there are now four books to this series, correct?
Yeah, there are four books to the series. The first three are a trilogy.
Okay.
And the fourth book is the first book of the second trilogy.
All right, great. So, why this story?
Well, I'm a big role-playing gamer, and okay. I've always been fond of Call of Cthulhu.
Okay.
And I like the style of, Lovecraft's writing were kind of stale. Well, but some of his colleagues...
His ideas are great.
Oh, yeah. The whole idea of, originally it had gothic horror.
Right.
It was all about man defying God.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, over the centuries, that's got kind of pretty stale too.
Sure.
So Lovecraft came up with this idea, well, he didn't actually come up with it, but he popularized the idea of...
God doesn't really care about you.
Well, there are things in the universe who, compared to humans, are godlike.
Right.
But compared to them are like ants or something.
Right.
We are completely insignificant in the universe.
So now how does this follow that stuff?
Well, in that genre of stories,
right.
The protagonists encounter some of these alien entities,
mm-hmm.
some of which are godlike, some of which are just aliens, some of which are, like studying humanity, or they all somehow end up intertwined with the fate of the planet Earth.
Okay.
And in my books, Anna encounters several of them. Utgarda is, I'll tell you about Utgarda. Utgarda is a name for the Norse god Loki.
Sure.
From the Varangian culture. The Varangians are the Vikings who didn't go out to sea, they went down the rivers of Eastern Europe.
Okay.
And Utgarda was their version of Loki, the trickster god. Well, there's a prominent figure in the Cthulhu mythos, Nyarlathotep, who is always interfering in men, tricking them into doing things,
right.
and otherwise subverting things for unknown purposes.
And Utgarda does it in your world?
Utgarda does it in my series.
Cool.
And Utgarda might be Nyarlathotep, you never know.
Oh.
And there are other Lovecraftian or mythos entities from various authors who appear in the books as well.
So this is a book that should be a home run for Lovecraftian fans and that genre fans, but also role-playing fans.
Yeah.
Gaming fan.
I mean,
so that's a lot of people that can come and check out this book.
Yeah, it's been very favorably received.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and you know, and the books don't have the you can't read the die rolls in there.
Right.
They're not, you know, Warhammer novels. They're actual books.
Cool. Excellent.
The first one is based on an actual Call of Cthulhu adventure.
Okay.
The second one is about 50% of a different adventure. The third one is entirely original.
Cool.
And the fourth one is.
So we keep getting further and further out to new territory.
The fourth one's all me.
That's beautiful. So talk to me about your process. How do we get into these worlds, and how do we get four books written?
Well, you know, if I wrote these 20 years or 10 years ago, even the first three books would have been one title. But,
right.
You know, these days you need a series.
Right.
Okay. But the first three books are actually a novelization of a campaign I ran.
Okay.
A very long time ago.
Okay.
I don't want to give away my age.
Nah. 22.
Call it vanity. Yes. And when I ran that game, I took a lot of notes, and they were just sitting on the shelf. In the meantime, I was writing something else, Tolkien-esque journey tale, which after 20 years went nowhere.
Still journeying.
Yeah, still on the way. Actually, I thought about going back and restarting that one, but you can't go back.
So I put go forward.
Just go forward. Yeah. When I turned a certain age, I put that aside and I just started writing these, and they've just been flowing out since
That's
then.
That's beautiful. That's great. So what is it? I mean, do you have a daily writing regimen, or is it stop? You know, is it a cycle? What do you think?
These books were written pretty much a chapter a week.
Okay. Cool.
You know, so I put the first three of them out. Like every 6 months.
That's great.
And then the fourth one took a little longer because my day job
kind
of heated up. And the fifth one I'm currently working on has been stalled because I've been really busy at work.
Well, yeah, get to it because people are going to want to see it.
I hope so.
So are you a, you know, they talk about plotters and pantsers, right? Plotters kind of have the whole story in their head or have planned it out. I would imagine from playing. Gaming notes, you might be a plotter, or are you more of a pantser, or a combination?
Combination. Like all three of these books, actually all four of the books, when I outlined them, they were 10 chapters.
Okay.
The finished products are all 20 to 30 chapters.
Yep.
You know.
Well, I mean,
scenes expanded or evolved or.
I do index cards, and then I think I have the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it always goes, you know, that's the skeleton at best.
Yep.
And then
yep.
When you're in the moment, you gotta serve the story, right?
Yeah. I'm hopeful. Glad to say that the end product is reasonably close to the original outline.
Right. But better.
But better. Yeah.
But better. Okay.
It's
cool.
It's got three-dimensional characters in it, and interesting places and people. And
that's fantastic.
Yeah.
All right. So where can gamers and Lovecraftians and fiction aficionados, where can they find the Ugarit series by Joab Stiglitz?
Well, they're all available on Amazon.
All right.
They're available as paperback and PDF.
Okay.
Or ebook, I should say. And the first three books are also available on Audible.
That's fantastic. Now I want to spell your name. It's Joab Stiglitz.
.com.
Go to the website, read more about it, then go to Amazon, buy them, read them, jump and live in that world. Have a great time.
Actually, there's links to them on my website.
Oh, even better. There you go.
I also have a Cafe Press store.
How about that? Cool. And how do you enjoy that?
Well, that one really hasn't produced much. But
all right, get to the cafe.
The pictures are out there. You can get posters, T-shirts.
Oh, cool.
All kinds of stuff.
Well, first we get them to read them, then we get them to be the cult. All right. This has been Tell the Damn Story with Joab Stiglitz and myself, Chris Ryan. Alex Simmons is probably saving the world. And we'll talk soon. All right, thanks. Go tell that damn story.
Chris Ryan from Tell the Damn Story, and I'm still at Pulp Fest having a good time. And we're here talking to Brett Brooks, who is the author of A Hand of Gold and Other Stories, a pussy catnip book. And Brett, you got to tell me, how did this come to be?
Well, I can actually tell you that pretty clearly. About a year and a half ago, I read an article about the 10 strangest comic book characters ever created. And I'm a very hardcore comic book geek. And the only name on that list that I didn't immediately recognize was Pussy Catnip. And that made me go, well, who is this? So I did a little bit of research on the character. There were a total of 23 Pussy Catnip stories that were ever written. They always appeared as backups in Fun Comics, Fox Comics, and, you know, Green Flame, things like that. Rib Tickler, but anyway. I read about her, and for some reason, I could not get the character out of my head. It just became the, I have to write a story. And that story evolved into a full-length novel. And the first novel in the series is actually called Red is the Darkest Color. And then the second one was The Devil Was Green. And the third book, which is an anthology of short stories, is A Hand of Gold, which you just mentioned. And she's a public domain character. It's about this anthropomorphic cat. Everybody in the series is an anthropomorphic animal, but she's an anthropomorphic cat that in the comic was either a hat check girl or a club owner or a torch singer. And she worked for either the Kit Kat Club or the Kit Kat Cafe, depending on which issue you were reading.
But wasn't there another style mixed in?
Yes, that's what I'm getting to. Okay. And it's like, and then they said, we want to do pulp. The guy who created it, as near as anybody can tell, is named Len Short. That's the only name associated with the character. And he took things that were popular in 1942, and that was anthropomorphic animals, your Bugs Bunny, Mickey Mouse types, pulp noir, noir movies and things, and superheroes.
Okay.
And smushed them all together. So you've got this pulp noir superhero anthropomorphic Catwoman. She drinks a magic potion, gets superpowers, and fights crime while working as a torch singer. And I sort of...
And she's anthropomorphic
She's an anthropomorphic cat, yes. anthropomorphic pussycat, hence the name Pussy Catnip.
So now, once you found out who this was she got her claws in you,
so to speak.
Right. How did you find the writing? Is this?
It was the easiest writing I've ever done. For whatever reason, like I said, I've always been a comic book geek, and I love the old noir films. So all of this sort of just fell into place naturally with my system somehow.
That's wild.
And I wrote the first book in under a month. And the second book took me 45 days to write. Wow. Hand of Gold, because I had so many other obligations writing and otherwise that I was working on, took me a while to get out. And I wrote six of the stories in it. There's six stories by other people who are immensely more talented than I am. And
they couldn't wait to write Pussycat.
Well, the weird thing is I talked to most of them and I said, in fact, none of them write in that genre. They're not crime writers. They're not superhero writers. They write in all kinds of different genres. But when I talked to them, you know, these are all writers I've known, and I talked to them about it, and they were like, yeah, sure, because they'd read the...
Oh, sure.
Most of them had read the first book. And they all came back to me with the, that was so much fun. I have not had that much fun writing in such a long time.
And looking at the cover, fun is the first kind of vibe that pops off.
It's this weird mix of very noir storytelling with over-the-top superhero dynamics. I mean, I told them, do whatever you want. I gave them a Bible, a short, you know, two-page Bible about where I set things up, because I did streamline a lot of what was from the original comic, because I just went, okay, I need to define her powers. I need to define her job. I need to define all this.
She has to have one job.
Exactly. She's now the owner of the Kit Kat Club.
Okay.
So it's like...
Well, you know, career advancement.
Exactly. And everybody took it their own direction. I mean, there's a a story in there about a mechanic dealing with mob bosses. There's a story in there about an out-of-luck gambler.
Okay.
About some, you know, rum runners, basically, old style prohibitionist rum runners.
Sure.
And several other stories. I mean, there's a lot of really cool stories that have been done.
Within the club or the world,
mm-hmm.
there's so many directions to go.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, it's... I use the Kit Kat Club as the center of my stories, but it's set in a city called Mutt Town, which I've created as a suburb of something called Big City.
Okay.
Because very 1940s comic books. You
don't
use real names for cities.
Right.
You know, for if you don't know how all that originally worked, you know, Gotham was New York, Metropolis was Chicago, and, you know, things like that. And now I've done that same sort of thing. And to me, this big city is Chicago, and she's on the south side of Chicago, but I'm not calling it that. And it gives you enough crime and dirt there that can be explored, but, you know, you can have things like a dragon pop up because it's bizarre.
Because you can.
Yeah. And I've just had way too much fun.
That's
and
very cool.
I'm delighted that it's been received as well as it has.
So if this were to become a television series, what channel would you see it on?
Oh, good Lord.
Is this more of a Adult Swim, or is this more of an HBO or an AMC, or where will you put it?
Jeez, nobody's asked me that question before. That is a great question.
That's why you come to tell the damn story.
I think the best option of those that you just gave me would probably be Adult Swim, but I could see it on AMC.
Right,
it's
cool.
Not an R-rated thing, so HBO is not needed. They tend to have a harder edge to their stuff.
Right.
I tend to tell people, whoever they're looking at my books, I give them movie ratings because they understand that.
Right, everybody understands that.
And
so what rating are we
PG-13. The Pussy Catnip books are all PG-13. There's suggestive stuff in it, and there's some language, but nothing
too crazy.
Yeah, nothing that I don't feel any young teenager. You get to 12 even, you know, it's like, yeah, they would have zero problems.
Cool.
And if they're advanced, even younger. Because there's nothing that's going to upset anybody.
Okay. Yeah. So let's talk about the writing behind this.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of writing habits do you have?
My writing habits lately have been horrible. But
when you're producing.
When I'm producing, I tend to set aside...
That's really the truth, right? Everyone says, I write every day,
go
back
actually,
and forth.
Actually, when I'm productive, I am writing every day.
Cool.
And that's the best part of it.
And what is your habits?
I tend to write at night. Because I'm done with all my chores as I look at it. Mm-hmm. And then I set aside time and I just go and I write. I like to have some sort of sound on in the background.
All right. So what do you listen to while you're writing this?
Bad movies. I put bad movies on in the background.
Are they old 40s deals or it doesn't make a difference?
It doesn't matter. It can be, you know, new movies, you know, that you would find on Netflix because God knows they have a lot
so
of
you'll just
horrible bad movies.
Pick something up, throw it on
throw
the background.
It on, throw it in the background.
That's
and
great.
I'm writing with that in the background because it's not something that's going to distract me.
Right.
But it's something that's not... It's going to keep me from being distracted by the
same
token.
It blocks out the distraction.
Exactly.
Yes, yes,
so I like to have
great.
That on in the background. I don't want to put on a song that I know because I'll sing along with it.
Yeah, I have to be very careful.
Yeah.
There's certain people that you're singing the lyrics. Can't put Dylan on while I'm writing. But sometimes I can put a playlist on that's in the background.
Sure.
Yeah.
And because the Pussy Catnip stuff set in my mind, set 1940.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. I will listen to some music from that era to get me in the mood before I start writing, and then I'll put on the
noise.
The movies.
Are you a plotter or a pantser?
Halfway. What I do, tend to do.
How's that work for you?
It works great for me.
No, I mean.
How do I do it?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I write a 2-page synopsis of my novels.
Wow.
I take it and I write it out as 2 pages. And then I write the whole book. So
that's
that
cool.
Gives me an idea exactly how the book is going to go from a story point of view without any true details. Right. It gives me the, you know, the two-page version of the
book. So you have a little bit, maybe like a clothesline, right?
Right,
maybe
exactly.
A spine or something.
I know where I'm going,
right.
But I don't structure it so much that I can't change it if I need to.
Sure, because we all change.
Sure, anybody who tells you otherwise, you know. And, but that's, I know people who do the 3x5 cards, and they'll even pull those out and replace them all the time.
Yeah. I do the index cards all the time, yeah. And then, you know, if something's going another way, okay, I'll get back to what
sure.
I'm doing.
Yeah. And most of the time, I go along just fine. In the first book, though, Red is the Darkness Color, I actually wrote an entire really long chapter that when I read it, when I read through it, I said, this is entirely unnecessary. And I pulled out the entire chapter.
That's great.
And it didn't hurt the story one bit.
Do you need to know the ending before you begin, or do you just like to discover it as the readers
work? Always have an end goal.
Okay.
That does change sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I know the gist of what's going to happen. The specifics of it often are altered.
Okay.
And that's true of every book I've ever written, not just the Pussy Catnip stuff. But
what else have you written besides that?
I've got a zombie-ish mm-hmm. novel. And my wife likes to call it the best zombie novel she's ever read. That's not about zombies. And it's called. It's called Edible Complex.
Okay.
And yes, it is got a humor aspect to it, hence the pun in the
sure.
title. It's basically a story of self-discovery.
Okay.
Zombies just happen to be the machine that moves that story along.
Cool.
And then I have a fantasy series called Champions of Elan that has two books out. Those are R-rated, by the way.
Those are kids.
Just so you know, don't let the kids read those.
All right.
That has two novels out in it, Harmonia and Child of Shadows.
Cool. And so what drives you to write in one style or the other?
Tend to always write in a pulp sense.
Okay.
Hence the reason I'm at this show.
Right, right.
But it's, I very much was heavily influenced by comic books and pulps and that kind of book when I was growing up.
Right.
And so when I'm sitting down to create a story, I tend to structure them in that manner.
That's what made us feel alive.
Right.
That was just, yeah,
I have very, stories read very quickly. Mm-hmm. They're very punchy. They tend to get right to the point.
Cool.
I've been told that I'm a literate writer mm-hmm. in the sense that I tend to write more like fine literature
okay.
in my actual writing. But I still feel that it's short and punchy.
Okay.
The Hemingway-ish, if you will.
Right, right, right.
So
excellent. So people who are interested, who have listened now, and they want to get their hands on either the R-rated or that title again?
Harmonia is the first one in that series. But again, all of my books stand alone. You don't have to read any
anything?
Of them to read any of the others.
Cool. Or if they want to go to Pussy Catnip, where do they find all these?
You can find, of course, everything on Amazon. All Thank
right.
you, Amazon.
Because Amazon is the world.
Yes, and you can look for Brett A. Brooks, because there is another writer by the name of Brett Brooks
okay.
who doesn't. You know, strangely
doesn't enough, write Pussycat.
Does
damn
not.
It.
But we both live in Atlanta. Go
oh,
figure.
Oh, really?
We met each other at Dragon Con a few years ago. It was very funny.
So Brett A. Brooks is the author you're looking for.
Not Brett Brooks.
And on Amazon.
Or you can go to PandaHead, one word, PandaHead.com.
Okay.
And that will get you to my site, which will show you how to get
oh,
to everything
fantastic.
Else.
Fantastic. PandaHead.
Yeah, that's the name of my publishing company.
That is a fantastic name.
Thank you.
All right. Is there anything else you think people should know?
That I'm a wonderful human being.
There you go.
And
deserves
that,
your attention.
And that I really look forward to eating a pizza next week if you can support me.
Please, please.
May I have some more, sir?
Excellent. All right. Well, Brett, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for telling us how you tell the damn story.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Appreciate it.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.